the 9 o'clock hour of Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike, 98973, as you know, you should know this by now, is the State Roofing text line. You can text us, be a part of the conversation, part of the show. As mentioned in the previous hour, Stacy Joe, we have something to talk about here, and it's just one of those conversations that 8.5 minutes ain't going to do it. So we had to pull her into 9 o'clock like we always do. Stacy, you're always so gracious when we need to talk to you later at night. So I do really appreciate that. We'll get to that in just one second, because first, I do have to say that Seattle Sports at Night is powered by Star Rentals, the preferred supplier of the West Best Contractors. Stacy's on, turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now the time with Stacy's on. Live and remote, it's Stacy Joe.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. Hanging in there.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Just great.
Doing like we do.
So last week, I think I sent this text to Aaron and Stacy. Actually, I can tell you precisely what time I sent it to Aaron and Stacy. I can call it up right now.
Here we go.
I sent it to them at 11:26 p.m. Mm-hmm. on the 18th, and the headline of the story is this. Ninth Circuit upholds that NC2A violates antitrust law. Judge described college sports as, quote, a cartel, which I read like a Valentine to me personally, because it was precisely what I've been arguing for. I was arguing this in college. I was
really
so offended at how I did not see, especially if you're going to, I went to San Jose State. You know, so you can't make it, well, that's $40,000 a year in free education, because at the time it was like, you know, $8,000 a year in free education. But on top of that, it was not in any way a fair trade when they route you into specific classes. But all that aside, it essentially opens the door for two things that I like. One, it opens the door for athletes to actually get some form of compensation. Two, it slaps back the NC2A from entering into agreements where it makes money without having to actually pay some of that money to the people who are actually making the money. And then there's a third thing that's not talked about in these stories that I've been kind of wondering whether or not this is going to happen. And Stacy, maybe you can weigh in on this as well, because I know you follow this issue fairly closely. So will this then allow, if you remember correctly, a lot of this litigation, they start over a few things, but one of the more famous ones is the Ed O'Bannon case, when he noticed his likeness in an NC2A-based college basketball game. It was clearly him in there, and he's realized, wow, this game is really popular. A lot of people are making money on it, but none of the athletes are, because we were amateur status, which is one of the greatest fallacies in all of collegiate athletics. He then sued along with some other folks, and they actually ended up doing marginally well, but it kind of cracked open the door for a lot of other lawsuits, and now we're at the place where we are now, where colleges now can find some way to compensate or not restrict athletes' ability to get themselves compensated. But the thing that made me wonder is this. Well, now that all of these cats are out of the bag, maybe the NC2A can go back and bring back some of these. Some of those games were great, and some of those games, I don't see why now Ohio State, you couldn't play with as the Ohio State Buckeyes in some NC2A football game with EA Sports. And maybe if the game is popular, some of that money does go to the athletes who are actually as part. Or maybe you just evenly divide it, like it goes to a fund that pays all of the football players or maybe all of the students some money. I mean, it seems like it opens the door for this sort of very logical cash contribution to go to the school that they are actually earning based on the popularity of their program, not unlike when Nike showers the head coach, and only the head coach, with millions of dollars, and maybe the athletic department, but none of that money actually goes to the people who are playing. This may actually, from a law standpoint, open up the door for that sort of compensation, and it doesn't bother me a whit.
I think one of the things, and I'm sure you see this all the time, both of you, whenever you talk about this, but I find that there is a lot of almost like anger around the idea of paying college athletes, particularly because they receive scholarships. But I've seen arguments ranging from, they're going to be in the NFL anyways. What does it matter to, well, they benefit from being really popular and having everything handed to them, which none of which are really fair mm-hmm. since a tiny fraction, we're talking like less than, you know, 3% of players ever even make it to the NFL. And it's even then significantly fewer than that make it to the NBA from college basketball. But it's also just a not really fair play to say that, well, someone's popular, so that's equal to paying them as part of a billion-dollar business. I just don't really buy that argument. One of the things that I always try to remind myself and would try to tell people to do as part of this conversation is you almost have to separate your love of college football. I love college football and college sports, and I love March Madness. It's one of my favorite times of the year, but you've kind of got to separate your love of that for just a minute when you're having the conversation, because having the conversation, particularly if you think that there should be changes, means changing something that you love. And mm-hmm. there's a fear that, I think for a lot of people, there's a fear that paying college athletes forever changes the game. And that's a really hard pill to swallow when it's something that kind of completes your existence, right? It's something you look forward to. It's something you love. You have posters on your wall and you've right. got bumper stickers on your car and you look forward to it every year. You take days off work maybe to stay at home and watch some of the games. So I get it. But it also doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a conversation that happens, because I think we've reached a point with particularly men's basketball and football where the level of money that's in the game, it has become laughable to say that these athletes are just here as scholarship students who can play sports. Both sides, student and school, understand that they're entering into a business agreement, but only one side gets money from it and, right. and benefits financially. The other side has a chance to benefit financially, but the odds of him actually doing that are incredibly low. I just think that we need to be a bit more honest with ourselves about the kind of worth that we assign something like a scholarship versus the kind of money that college sports are bringing in. And I know someone's going to chime in and say, but so many college sports are in the red and they break even and they don't even make money. A lot of the times that's intentional.
Oh, is it one of those like reporting losses kind of business strategy type things? Like clever bookkeeping?
You are required to, as a result of Title IX, spend rough equivalencies on what you're spending per athlete. Mm-hmm. And so they cook the books a lot mm-hmm. to show losses in other areas to make it appear as if they are doing that, when in fact they are not doing that. Mm. But I would also say that everyone likes to talk about these sort of expenses. Remember, they also spend for these expenses. So they are building, I mean, they're not... When they talk about how these float to other programs, let's remove from the conversation the $95 million training facility just for one team
right.
that you built.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, yeah. and all of the rest of the stuff that you spend on that program. And they don't spend it because you cannot train athletes in a more modest facility. They spend it because that is a recruitment tool. Mm. They spend it because
right.
they bring someone through. They give them fake Sports Illustrated covers of themselves on sports as college. They literally do this.
Wow.
They take them on a tour of this thing that looks like the fanciest health club you have ever seen. And if you want to see that, go down to Oregon and take a look at the U of O's. I mean, mm. the UW is nice. University of Oregon and what Phil Knight has spent down there, it is nicer than, and as some Oregon athletes have said when they got to the NFL, they had nicer facilities
wow.
at Oregon.
Wow.
And so when they're spending
yeah.
this money and then crying poor, I don't know. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but maybe I just don't understand their math.
Is that their argument? Is that the school's argument that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing with the money?
Their argument is, I think, it's multifold, but go ahead, Stacey.
They don't necessarily put that forward as their argument. That's the argument that I have mostly heard from people who object, is one, that schools break even. And like Mike just said, there's layers to that that don't necessarily make that true. And two, that this is just what college sports is. And paying players not only ruins that, but it makes it unfair, which is one of the most ironically used phrases of unfair in the realm of college sports,
exactly.
Where there's one winner and people harp against participation trophies. But that aside, schools The NCAA as a whole has very heavily leaned on, I would say the vast majority of their argument has been amateurism. And that's very carefully used because that is the reason that has helped them win cases in the past. They didn't win a Supreme Court case in, I think, 85. It was like something versus Oklahoma or something. They didn't win that case because they said, well, we break even. They won it in part because there was this little note in there that said that, well, it's amateurism. You have to consider the concept of amateurism. And so leaning on that has a legal importance to the NCAA outside of just saying, well, this is how we run things.
Well, you also have to ask yourself, why did they get to write that definition? What makes somebody who has, if you're playing basketball
right.
for Duke,
uh-huh.
and you've been playing at a high level, coached up level in grade school at some AAU team through maybe an academy, which is common. Zion Williamson would be a great example. Common. So you're playing at an academy, and now you're playing at Duke, and at every single level, you have had nothing but nutritionists and coaches. You've had people guiding. You're like,
there's
the only thing that makes it amateur is the lack of money that
right.
you are obviously getting. And
right.
so we've decided that amateurism is this catch-all excuse because we don't want to pay someone for all the work they're putting in. It's an absolute farce. It's been a farce. And remember, as I said before, anyone who wants to read the best writing on the history of the NCAA, read Taylor Branch's piece. They were published about 3 years ago. He's the guy who did famous three-part biography of Martin Luther King. It's a seminal work, Pulitzer Prize-winning work in American history. He also took on the NCAA. It is remarkable.
Hmm.
And even the term student-athlete is a marketing term developed by the NCAA. They admit this in the 1960s. So please, when you're using that term, understand you're using their language, and their language is designed to make you believe a certain thing about
right.
college sports that factually isn't true.
Right.
Well, and Chapel Hill had a huge thing running into this when they were dealing with essentially like allowing kids, student athletes, to bypass some like academic requirements, and
totally.
I think that they would have like paper classes. So I think that when another argument is when people say, well, they get a scholarship. Yes, a scholarship is worth a lot of money and it's immensely valuable, and I'm completely grateful for my college education, but you don't really get a fair shot at a scholarship if you are a student athlete. I can't stress enough, particularly with, like I said, men's basketball or football, you are dedicating, it is a full-time job for you.
Yeah. Yep.
You can't come in and get a free scholarship to be pre-med. You aren't coming in to get a free scholarship to pursue any major. Your work is around your job as an athlete, not your sports life around your job as a student.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's athlete-student would be fairer
yeah.
than student-athlete.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So where does that put, so this recent case, where does that put this whole situation now?
So what this does is this. It's kind of, this is a simplified version of it. It essentially, and this is where people are going to get, I think, justifiably terrified until they look at the situation that exists right now. It actually puts schools in the position where they can offer forms of compensation, including cash, to athletes who come to their school. So if we can give you this benefits package, you know, John Smith, out of San Francisco to come play football at Alabama. So they can now do that. Now, what are people going to say? Well, they're going to say it's going to weight everything toward the big schools with a lot of money.
Right.
To which I say, what's the difference?
Yeah. Isn't that mm-hmm. the case now?
Completely.
Yeah.
Right.
Completely.
Yes. If you are going to operate like a multi-billion-dollar business, you should be subject to antitrust law. You can no longer claim, like those earlier court cases you won, that you are exempt from antitrust law because you're an amateur sport and you're really just about colleges that have this extracurricular thing. That's not what you are. You're operating like a multi-billion-dollar business because you are a multi-billion-dollar business.
Yeah.
And so you should be subject to those laws. And one of those laws is not price fixing. It's not being able to say, no matter where you go, we are agreeing to pay you zero. Like if you're out here arguing that it's not fair and one player might get more attention, name your team's kicker. Like name,
right.
you know what I mean?
Right.
Name like five swimmers. And I was a swimmer. Like there is no fairness in college sports. It's the industry. It's how it works. And guess what? All of these athletes are tough kids. They've been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. They're familiar with it.
And on top of that, I mean, if we're looking at the idea of athletes making money, and you allow them now to make endorsement money, why not, while they're an athlete, don't even require them to go to school? I don't think they need to. Give them 4 years of education whenever they want to take that 4 years. If they are a good enough athlete and they can get through 3 years, and then you owe them 3 years of education whenever they want to take it. They can pay for that fourth year. If they get out and they go on to become, you get the 4 years, but you don't have to take it right then. Because most of these people, as Stacey could tell you, wash out in less than 3 years in the NFL? Let's just say it's the NFL. Why shouldn't they be able to wash out of the NFL? They've got a couple hundred grand in the bank, maybe.
Right.
And then go back to Alabama
and get a degree, an education.
And then move on. They're, at this point, they're 24 years old.
Right. You know? Right.
That's just fine.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. I've never heard that, but that's not a bad idea. Any final thoughts, Stace?
My final thought on how to find a way to make college sports a more modernized version of itself, instead of a version of itself that completely ignores its economic growth for the last 20 years, is to accept that there is no easy answer and that we don't have the answer yet. And not only that, but that our answer might change over time, and that's okay. And to accept that not knowing the answer shouldn't be a reason to avoid a change. I think that it's a huge endeavor to take on to try to figure out, how do we make this something that isn't corrupt, that's something we can love without feeling kind of guilty about it?
I think you're right. And I think maybe we don't know the answer because no one's ever been allowed to ask the right question. We've always been asking the wrong question. And now that we're actually in a place where we're getting closer, and I agree with you, we're not there, we're getting closer to the right question, then maybe we're going to find at least an answer that works.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk about Tiger King tomorrow, Mike.
No. Let's go for another hour on this one.
I know. For real. It's serious.
I can't wait for these two worlds to collide. I can't wait for Joe Exotic to come out with this huge report he did in jail about how to fix Alabama football. And you will have no choice but to talk about it.
That's right. I love it. That is Stacey Joe. You can hear her every day on 710 ESPN on the Tom, Jake, and Stacey show from noon to 3. And, of course, every night here on Cairo Nights. Appreciate you, Stacey. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, Stacey.
Thanks, guys.
We'll be back with more Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mace and Mike, thanks for tuning in. Mike, some good news out of Amazon. If you listen to the show enough, you can probably guess my take on these giant, monolithic, trillion-dollar corporations. And while I tend to give them a hard time, I think it is also important to remember, and I don't always talk about this aspect, but to remember that, you know, these companies are comprised of a bunch of different people, and there are a lot of folks in these companies who are trying to do good, are trying to use their position to leverage the resources that they have to make positive changes in the world, and Amazon has done that.
Yeah, Amazon. So what happened today is, the Mary's Place Family Center, the fully operational facility. Mary's Place has been around a long time in Seattle, and it is earmarked for women with children who become homeless. Mm-hmm. Frequently, there are people who are fleeing abusive households. It's not always strictly for economic reasons,
right?
And it's been one of the best regarded nonprofits in Seattle for its entire existence, and Amazon. I mean, fortunately for them, their location to where Amazon decided to build its industrial complex Amazon sort of took it under, literally, in some ways, took it under its wing.
Yeah.
And built it, built Mary's Place, a helped build Mary's Place, a brand new facility. It's 8 floors, 63,000 square feet, has a capacity for 200 people a night. And they did it by linking up to already a well-regarded, well-running service, which is
smart.
Nice. And with a particularly vulnerable group of people, which is women with their children. And it's nice to see, one, Amazon put its money into this. They equated the contribution that they've made to in the $160 million range. There's a few things that are good about this. I don't know about the accounting. I know it would normally have been a tremendously expensive piece of real estate, and Amazon largely carried that weight.
Yeah.
Two, I like the fact that Amazon is now starting to mature as a corporate citizen and putting its money into it. A lot of people criticized Microsoft early on for exactly the same things they've criticized Amazon about. And this is a company's maturation process. I mean, you would not have, it was, you know, Bethlehem Steel back in the day when it was still around. When it was growing, it was not necessarily going a benevolent corporate participant. It was making steel and moving it all over the world and employing a lot of people, but it didn't care about it. It was much more interested in, like, how are we going to be a bigger company tomorrow?
Right.
Amazon went through the same growth period. Boeing went through the same growth period. Weyerhaeuser went through the same. They all do it. But then there's that pivot where they start realizing that we've got enough money that we need to, then we've had an impact on the community. We actually are responsible contributor to the community in ways beyond employing people. Amazon has always fallen back on this idea historically. We pay a lot of people and they in turn donate to charities. And then there's the Bezos Family Fund, which is relatively small when you compare it to his personal wealth. But nonetheless, it has given money. One of the largest donations ever to Fred Hutch came from that fund. But then Amazon, that wasn't enough. And especially when Amazon's salaries resulted in this sort of wave of increased housing costs and other things, the city sort of felt like it was pushing out people of moderate income in favor of new people with higher incomes. And Amazon really started getting the crosshairs a lot. This is where the head tax notion and movement came from.
Right.
Well, all of this is wrapped in this whole idea of, like, how is Amazon as a corporate citizen in the town where it grew up? And this thing, Mary's Place, has carried a lot of that weight to convince you, like, wait a minute, this is not what Amazon's philanthropy is anyway, is limited to, but it is really one of those things that that company, I think, rightfully should hang its hat on, because this is the vulnerable among the vulnerable. This is one of those organizations that really is dramatically helping some of the people most in need. And having been down there myself, I am always happy to, when I read about them getting, you know, a brand new facility that can take care of families, that you look at the pictures on GeekWire today, they did a big story on it.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful,
it's beautiful
facility, and it's exactly what it has to be. Such a relief to get to a place with your kids that's safe and it's warm and it's clean, and you're not going to be asked to leave, you know, anytime soon. And it's right there in a tech hub. So it has this collateral benefit of all of those folks who walk from mass transit into their giant silver cylinder and do their work and walk out, have to walk past it every day. And I think it's important for all of us to take a look around us and see the world where we don't exist. And maybe engage in that, and maybe by having it right there in the heart of all of this corporate wealth is even a better side benefit that we'll get a chance to see over the next few years.
Yeah, it feels like a tech campus, those pictures.
Yes.
It looks like Amazon's offices.
It was designed to blend in. It literally is built next to its Amazon's HQ.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that this is really great. And it's the kind of thing that people broadly talking about in cities when you talk to urban planners. The mixing of income levels is really important as an idea, so you don't create pockets of exclusivity and pockets of extreme wealth, that you blend services, you make a city, so you have all kinds of economic strata, and that leads to other forms of diversity as well. And this is how you get it, by putting a Mary's Place right in the heart of some of the most expensive real estate in the United States.
Yes, we're talking about laundry facilities, bathrooms, a big dining room, an industrial kitchen, spaces for kids to play. They have private rooms, so while everyone's concerned about social distancing during this time, they'll be able to follow that. There are, this is again according to GeekWire, surfaces that allow for deep cleaning, dedicated on-site health services. I mean, this is, if you've never been in a situation where, you know, you just don't have any other options, where life has really dealt you a bad hand, the power that something like this has to change lives is, you just can't overstate it. I mean, think about these kids who, I don't know, but how many of them would ever find themselves in a location like this, in a place right. like this, mixing right. with people like this? And then maybe you got a kid who wanders over to a computer, he sees everybody doing stuff, he wants to get involved, and then turns into, you know, the next Jeff Bezos. I mean, that's not entirely out of the picture here.
No, you know, and I guess what I would add to that is whether or not that happens, and you would hope that it is. I mean, we all are a product of our experiences and then our ambitions from those experiences, right?
Right, right.
But the other thing is just like the problem frequently with kids who grow up in traumatic circumstances and adults who experience them as well is there is no relief. A lot of people can go through fairly serious trauma over a short period of time and find their way with a lack of health services or whatever around and through that and maybe come out good on the other side. But the sustained trauma has real long-term debilitating effects.
Yeah.
And when you can get people out of a bad situation, by that I mean a sustained trauma situation, and into something that just creates a breaking point from that and allows them the chance to regroup,
yep.
to breathe deep,
yep.
to get a good meal, to get warm, get dry, get safe, and then start really reassessing, because it's very, very difficult to reassess your future when your present is a threat.
Yes.
And this is what the places like Mary's Place do, and do in a really marvelous way, because any of you out there who are parents, you know what I'm talking about. If it's your kids, how much can you concentrate on anything else if you were in a traumatic situation mm-hmm. every single day with your kids? That's the type of thing that this facility does, and Amazon rightfully deserves enormous credit.
Yep, couldn't agree more. If you have any discretionary income out there, if there's anybody who's looking for a place to donate, I can't recommend Mary's Place enough. They just do amazing work around here, and this is just a part of it. We'll be back, everybody. More Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike. It's time to shut her down, boys. That's it. Another one in the books this Thursday evening. It's time for What's on Your Mind. We're going to tell you. You can tell us if you like, 98973. State Roofing text line. You guys know that by now. But this is, it's free form, baby. It's whatever you're thinking about. It's literally what's on your mind. Who wants to go first? Anybody? Bueller?
How about you this time?
Me?
Ah.
Well, shoot, I'll go. I have two things on my mind. One is I feel like my whole day was thrown off by my router internet issues this morning. I was on the phone. I didn't go to bed at a reasonable hour last night, and I was like, okay, well, I'm sleeping in just a little bit, and I'll get to what I need to get to. I'll just hook this thing up. It'll be a quick shot. It wasn't. It took multiple hours, but light at the end of the tunnel, guys. Everything's fine. Don't worry about me. I know you were all ready to call in, text in, worried about me. Don't be worried. It's fine. The other is I have the oddest thing stuck in my head, and I don't know if you guys get loops and songs, little melodies. You
sure.
know, you just get something in your head, and you can't get it out.
Earworms.
Mine is, it's so bizarre. It's from the show Community, and there's this little piece of like, it's almost like on hold jazz. Like when you put on hold and you hear this little, and this loop has just been going and going in my head for like days now, and I can't get it out. I'm walking into the studio, I catch myself whistling it. It's madness. So I got to find, what I need to do is find that song and download it. But they only use it like it's on a radio in the show, or they just use it as like comical bits throughout the series. I need to find it on the internet somewhere and just listen to it over and over again until it goes away. That's my
I'll jump.
Theory. What do you say, Frank?
So I want to send a shout out to my daughter. Here's what happened today. She picked up, officially picked up her cap and gown.
Mm-hmm.
and the tassels and everything,
mm-hmm.
and then decorated the mortarboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked at it and watched her. Bless her heart, you know, she spent all this time with it. She's not going to graduate. There's not going to be a graduation right. ceremony.
She's a high school senior.
Right. She'll graduate.
Sure.
But there won't be, I mean, she was just basically playing with stuff that she's not really going to use.
Yeah.
And I just broke my heart to watch it. And I thought of the thousands of kids that are graduating here, supposed to graduate in the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
Yeah.
In most districts, that they're just there's not going to be any kind of a formal ceremony that we all think of for that particular passage. So just a shout out to her and a shout out to everybody listening connected with some a family member that
absolutely
has to do that. You
absolutely.
Know? Hearts with you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. How about you, DB?
Mine is very trivial and selfish, but it struck me today as I was looking at my assortment of clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I really miss shopping, specifically going to Value Villages and other sort of thrift stores and shopping. And I am just like kind of at the end of my rope of the things that I am like excited to wear. And I usually only buy like one or two items per month to sort of, you know, it just brings me, I don't know, this weird like excitement and dopamine.
Yeah, man, it's retail
that,
therapy.
Yeah, that I love. And so, and just finding something is really fun in a thrift store. And I haven't had that and I miss it. Mm. I want it back. Mm. And I don't know when that's going to come back.
Yeah. Same here. How about you, Mike?
I want to do a quick poll.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, to Frank's point about his shout out to his daughter.
Yeah.
Would you have been heartbroken if your graduation had been canceled, Aaron?
Yes.
David Burbank?
I think at the time, yes. In hindsight, I wish I did not walk a graduation. It was 4 hours of my life.
Oh, man.
Frank, would you have been heartbroken?
Yeah, I think I would have been heartbroken about the lack of the passage, the lack of the ceremony, even though I'm with David. 4 hours was not my happy place.
How about you, Mike?
No.
Yeah, I don't
not at
care.
All. Not at all. I mean, I did good in high school
sure.
and went to a small Catholic school and still have friends from that high school. I mean, and I'm not in any way saying that people shouldn't be disappointed.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. People shouldn't feel bad
sure.
about that. I'm not saying that. I was just thinking that we've done a lot of discussions about that. Chris Sullivan as well.
Yeah.
You know, another person who had a kid graduating who was really, really bummed for their kid about it. But then I started thinking like, and I immediately agreed. And I thought, well, what would I have done? And I would have been like, yeah, I would have been. It wouldn't have bothered me. I would have been. This is the best day of my life. I could like go do everything else with my friends except that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, and again, I'm not saying that was anyone else's reaction. And maybe my reaction is a little bit petty. And I certainly don't think that anyone who wants to go through it
right.
should be denied it.
Right. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I actually am a big believer in ritual and in ceremony. And I think there are certain mm-hmm. things that you need to mark with these sort of events. On the other hand, had it happened to me, I would have been jazzed.
Oh, I love it. That's it for us, everybody. Thanks for listening. For Mike Lewis, Frank Shires, DB, I'm Aaron Mason. We'll see y'all tomorrow. I know they don't